I'm Adam.
And I'm Mike.
Welcome to The Dad Experience,
a podcast where dads can connect
and openly share stories.
Here's what to expect on this episode of The Dad Experience.
The availability of highly entertaining computer and video games, as well as late night socializing on the internet, definitely contribute to an unwillingness to get to bed at a decent time because they're having fun.
Yeah.
So they don't, teenagers especially, don't get the 9 to 10 hours of sleep that they really need.
The Dad Experience.
Welcome again to The Dad Experience. Have a great, fun show for you today with lots of information. On today's show, we have author Dr. Lori Holman. Dr. Holman is a psychoanalyst with specialized training, clinic training in infant, parent, child, adolescent, and adult psychotherapy. She's been on the faculty of New York University and the Society for Psychoanalytic Training and Research. Along with many others. She, as I said, is an author. She has a brand new book coming out on June 9th of 2020, The Busy Parent's Guide to Managing Exhaustion in Children and Teens, The Parent Intelligence Way. We're going to talk about that, as well as managing technology and a lot of great other things.
Welcome, Dr. Holman, to the show.
Hi.
Thank you for being here. We really appreciate it and really excited to get some of your expertise on some of the things that us as parents, you know, may struggle with, throughout our parenting journey.
Yes. Is your audience all dads?
Not necessarily. You know, we do, obviously started marketing towards dads, but we do have quite a few moms that listen and, you know, different makeups of different households, single dads, partnerships, not necessarily married parents, a lot of partnerships. So all walks of life. So we welcome everybody. It did start out, it's called The Dad Experiences, but experience, but we like to, have moms and dads share their stories and each other. So yeah. So, you know, the first question we always ask here on The Dad Experience is who lives with you at home and what's the makeup of your household?
Okay. I live with my husband only. I have two very empathic, industrious adult sons who are both fathers. The older one is devoted to his 9 and 11-year-old boys, and the younger one has a 5-month-old.
Wow, busy.
Yeah. So despite their careers, they focus on their roles as fathers as very important to them. Watching my younger son with his baby is really dramatic. I feel like he's a mother. I mean, he's as protective and connected as I remember being with him. It's really fun to watch. And my kids were raised the parental intelligence way, so I'm proud to see how they communicate so well with their kids. Mm-hmm. I've watched my older son with his boys listen really empathically to them, learn their ideas, their opinions, their thoughts. And these are not including the baby. They're not exhausted kids because my son and his wife really attend carefully to their school and after school schedules so they can enjoy school, have after school life, but still have free play. Yeah. So it's a good balance.
It is. It's very, very, very important. You know, me being an educator, I see a lot of exhaustion all the time. And you know, the sad part is you never know what's creating that exhaustion. Is it overstimulated at home or overworked at home? Not, I don't want to say overworked, but over-involved. But we want to keep our kids involved because we know that helps them develop, you know, their brain development, and they want to be in other things. But I see it quite a bit where kids come in and they're just, especially I teach in a smaller school where they're like, well, I'm going to do robotics, but I'm going to do band and I'm going to do athletics. Right. I'm a band teacher, so I kind of get where they're all pulled from, but it's just so hard. And I, you know, my heart kind of breaks sometimes to just see these kids exhausted, but they're willing to give you their all. So it's very interesting to see that.
Yeah.
You know, you made me think of something when you were talking about your sons. Do you see more, maybe in your experience and what your research has led you, have you seen more of a movement towards dads getting more of that maternal feeling and more being more maternal with their children and maybe sharing those duties? Obviously, we'll never replace that because we don't, you know, bond that way within the womb like the mothers do. But do you see that kind of evolving a little bit more?
Without question. In fact, there's research that shows that not only do hormones in mothers change so that they are kind of biologically prepped, mothers who have pregnancies, not adoptions.
Right, right.
They're biologically prepped to do the maternal work, but fathers' hormones change too. Mm-hmm. So it's important for mothers to know that, that their husbands are biologically geared to focus on the babies just like they are.
Yeah. And it's, and you know, it's refreshing to see that kind of that movement and see that kind of move away from the dad has to go to work and the mom has to stay home. And the dad, he only needs to be home for a week and then they should go back to work. It seems like that's shifting. And I've talked to more dads out there that are taking 4 weeks off when the baby's born or 3 weeks off. Sometimes it's met with a little bit of apprehension, but more power to these people, because, you know, I was looked at a little bit differently when I took 3 weeks off myself. And I didn't think that was enough. not enough for my wife and not enough for me to bond, but you know, it was a start. Yeah. And it's great to see these movements happening. And I'm even seeing more with legislation getting pushed through to help.
Yeah. Have paternity leave. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's so great to see. So, you know, let's kind of get into what your books and what our topics are kind of going to drive us to, but tell us a little bit about your book, The Busy Parent's Guide to Managing Exhaustion in Children and Teens, and why you felt the need to write this book.
Okay. Well, after 30 years experience as a psychoanalyst doing psychotherapy with children, teens, and adults, like you did with your work, I've noticed how exhausted kids can get. So this inspired me to address parents with an exploration of how exhaustion is a major factor in the well-being of their kids. To define it, exhaustion is extreme mental or physical fatigue, a form of depletion of resources. You're drained of energy, of vitality. There's a weariness and fatigue that occurs when kids feel depleted due to stress. So sleep, the intention of sleep is to have a restorative role that enriches daytime functioning, memory, regulation of mood, pain sensitivity, immune function, and appetite. It's really a lot of functions to sleep. Exhaustion due to sleep deprivation can be with trauma and excessive stress in a family, and it's really a societal concern. And if we look at it that way, then we can really make major changes. Depending on the developmental age of the kids, the amount of sleep they need is different. But the National Sleep Foundation said that 30% of preschoolers don't get enough sleep. And another study said that sleep-deprived young children consume 20% more calories. So it certainly affects your diet, which I know we'll get to later. If you are exhausted due to sleep deprivation, you have decreased vigilance, alertness, alterations in your mood, your cognition, your mental and physical health. And many children live in a state of what I would call partial sleep deprivation. And in fact, in adolescence, it's considered epidemic. So this clearly led me to write this book. Actually, this is my publisher's idea for this particular book, because I had written an original book, Unlocking Parental Intelligence, Finding Meaning in Your Child's Behavior. Mm-hmm. And that's a five-step tool that they wanted me to not revamp, but focus for busy parents. So that's how we came up with the Busy Parents series, and exhaustion is one of the topics. So that and most households have busy parents, two working parents, married, unmarried, partners, whatever the mixture. Usually they're both working. So the idea was to write a series of shorter books for busy parents, so they had a kind of go-to approach that they immediately understood and had organized in their mind, so they could use it when their kids had puzzling problems or behavior that they didn't understand.
You know, you talked a little bit about sleep deprivation, and it makes me think automatically of my daughter. My oldest daughter is three and a half, or almost three and a half. Uh-huh. And we've set a lot of structure within the day. So not necessarily a lot of activities, but a lot of play, a lot of free play. There's routines. So before bed, you know, they get so mm-hmm. much, you know, maybe there's a little bit of wind down time, whatever. But for whatever reason, I don't know why. We just got done potty training too, so I don't know if that has an effect for that. But yeah. We put her up at like the time that she's supposed to go to bed, but mm-hmm. she just wants to be so active and keep moving and doing things mm-hmm. like it. And sometimes we'll put her up there 7 or 8 o'clock-ish is what bedtime mm-hmm. is for her. Mm-hmm. And she won't go to bed till 10, 11, and there's no nap. There's a little bit of a resting time. We still implement instead of nap because we know that she doesn't necessarily nap, and we know when she does nap, it makes that mm-hmm. bedtime later. So we give mm-hmm. it quiet time. You know, we kind of set structure with the visual light, like a light for her to see when she, it is quiet time's over. But I don't know. I mean, have you seen that a lot? Is that is something that you notice? Like, is it overstimulated still, or is it just growing pains for the child?
Well, how long has it been lasting?
How long has that been? That's been maybe about, I want to say 6 months.
So this is a long pattern then.
Yeah, it's been a long pattern. Mm-hmm.
When does she wake up? How many hours of sleep does she actually get?
She will usually wake up anywhere between 7 and 8 a.m.
If she's falling asleep at 8, she's getting 12 hours sleep. So that's really okay.
If she's falling asleep at 8, but she's staying up for an extra hour or two after that.
But she still wakes up at the same time?
Yeah. Ready to go, too.
And not exhausted?
Not exhausted at all. Man, we're exhausted because we're chasing her around. But
kids are individuals. Yeah. Maybe she actually needs less sleep.
Maybe. That's interesting. You know,
you want to kind of reframe it in your mind, not as a battle between you and her, but adjust to her sleep needs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. having her stay up late, of course, interferes with your night. Your pediatrician I would ask the pediatrician if I'm right, that mm-hmm. your child in particular doesn't need as much sleep as most 3-year-olds. Right.
Yeah.
And then you work it out, because there's no sense sleeping a battleground.
Right.
I really don't like that. Kids need to know that when they're tired, they need to sleep. That's why we sleep.
Yep.
You know, mommy and daddy go to sleep when they're tired. Mm-hmm. And some kids just collapse, you know? So
they go till the end.
yeah. But I would think about the fact that, think of your child as a separate individual, not just all 3-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
She may need less sleep. She may be a very overstimulated, but very stimulated child.
Mm-hmm. And she is very active. She is a very active child. Her parents are definitely, children of ADD or ADHD at times, or the mother, uh-huh. the mom and dad at times. So, we do recognize that too could be a factor.
But if that were the case, then she would be exhausted at times.
Okay.
In other words, after being super active, hyperactive during the day, she would have a lull, and you're mm-hmm. not really describing that.
Right. No, there is no lull. There is no lull.
Mm.
she's very, very beautiful and a great kid, though. I love the energy. It's just I'm concerned because I don't want her to fall into any, traps as she gets older.
Yeah. I would just check with the pediatrician and make sure she fits the profile of a child at her age.
Great.
And
yeah, that's
probably a greater range than you imagine.
Right. Yeah, that's great advice, and we'll definitely take that up. So, you talked a little bit about parents and your children even following the steps of parental mm-hmm. intelligence. Can you give us an example of that, or maybe a study that you did, or just a real life example?
I'm going to give you an example from the book, so that you have it. The book is filled with vignettes, so that it's very easy to see how parents apply it to different kids' problems with exhaustion.
Great.
So this, I picked a 8-year-old little girl named Lydia. At 7 in the morning, her first alarm clock buzzes. She presses the snooze button, barely aware she's doing it. And then she has another alarm clock across the room because she knows the one on her nightstand doesn't do the trick.
Hmm.
So she's getting up in the morning. It has become an event. You know, her mother admires that she wants to depend on herself, but inevitably her mother has to get involved. And Lydia awakens exhausted, the opposite of your child. No matter how much sleep she gets in, it isn't enough for the strenuous activity she's engaged in. She's fit, she eats well, but all her activities except violin weigh on her budding musculature. So each morning, her mother must coax her to get dressed and eat a hearty breakfast. So it's not that they argue too much, but they aren't enjoying each other's company early morning.
Mm-hmm.
Lydia does well in school. She does a lot of extra activities. She has in gymnastics, ballet, violin, and lacrosse. And this means 5 evenings a week and Saturday morning, she's fully scheduled. Now, she loves her activities. She prides herself on her performance, and she has aspirations to join the lacrosse travel team the following year. But her mother notices, and her father sees, that Lydia is usually exhausted and barely able to eat dinner and do homework before falling asleep often at her desk. So she's also getting too many minor illnesses, according to the pediatrician. So they know they have to do something to address this. So the first step is called stepping back, which really means pausing and questioning what's going on, not doing anything, just thinking about it. And these parents realize that her pattern of scheduling has prevented Lydia from having play dates and generally hanging out. So they barely have time to even have conversations with her except when driving in the car. They go to the second step, which is called self-reflecting, which it gives the parents a time to think about how are their needs and wishes or expectations for their child interfering with what the child actually needs. So both parents realize they want to give the kid, Lydia, all the advantages of learning various skills and having fun that their own parents did not offer them when they were growing up. So they've been determined since she was a toddler to give her every imaginable educational toy and preschool invention that could be found. But at this point, they question whether all their scheduling is really for Lydia or for themselves, to in some way make up through their daughter for what they felt they missed out on. The next step is step 3, understanding your child's mind. And this is really the most essential step. Lydia claims she loves everything she does, and she's usually at the top of the groups in her performance. But she does complain she doesn't really have friends to confide in. She's too busy. She isn't being invited to lots of birthday parties and sleepovers and is feeling left out. So her activities also are in different towns than her school is, except for lacrosse. So it's hard for her to connect with these kids. So that's very important that she reveals this. And then the next step, step 4, is understanding your child's development. So what they see is that at age 8, she is straining a body that is still growing. And her pediatrician is concerned that it's too much. The doctor feels that all the physical exertion on her slim little body may cause injuries that she's too young to endure. Her body isn't ready for this. The course is particularly demanding, and if she gets onto the travel team, that'll mean daily practices. So considering a regular school day followed by gymnastics and ballet, her body's being pulled and stretched too extensively. So the parents realize they have to do step 5, problem solving. And in order to protect their daughter from their overscheduling of her life, they want to discuss it with her. And that's the parental intelligence approach, to work with your child. So it's not an authoritative, dictative role. Instead, it's really learning what's on your child's mind and working out what works for her and the parents. She's reluctant to have this talk because she's absorbed her parents' wishes to never feel left out of every opportunity, which is really common around for kids her age. But for Lydia, she's become a perfectionist. So the parents decide one Sunday afternoon to have quality time together, a little picnic lunch at a park. And she's an only child, so she loves this because she feels special. but she's also quite exhausted by the time Sunday rolls around. So at the park, the dad has the courage to bring up the subject of overscheduling. And Lydia immediately protests. I like all that I do, and I do it really well. Why do you think we should change things? I promise. I'll get it on my own. I will. I'll be independent. And mommy, you don't have to help me get dressed. And her mother replies, because Lydia's intentions are good, but she can't do it. Mm-hmm. Mom says, I do understand that you like to be independent, and for 8 years old, you really are. But truthfully, tell us, what is it like for you when you try to wake up? And she says, I set 2 alarms, as you know, but even though I try really hard to get out of bed, the second alarm just rings and rings. I can hardly move. Sometimes my calves ache from ballet, my neck muscles hurt from gymnastics. Now, I hate to admit that I feel any of that, because I want to be an Olympic star someday. Wouldn't that please you both? And Dad says, you've never told us about these very high aspirations. Olympic star. I can imagine it, but Olympic athletes usually focus on one sport, not several. And also, what's this thing about pleasing us? And she says, I know you and mommy take pleasure in all I do and constantly say, just do your best. But really, I think that means be the best. Don't you really mean that deep down? Both parents exclaim at once, no, absolutely not. Lydia's mother starts to cry, and in between the tears, she says, Lydia, I don't love you because of what you do or don't do. I love you always and forever, no matter what you choose. I think you mistook our enthusiasm for your activities for something much more than we ever intended. You have our approval no matter how well you do at everything, including your schoolwork. Don't think we're pressuring you to be perfect. But Lydia says, it's really ingrained already at 8 years old. I want to be perfect. That's what I do. Being perfect is perfect. I know I need a lot of carbs to have the energy for my stuff, but sometimes I think I eat too much pasta and cheese, and I'm going to get fat. So her parents look at each other, realizing eating disorder is part of this.
Jeez.
Potentially. That scheduling isn't the only problem causing her exhaustion, but her perfectionistic standards are so over the top. But that's the problem they really have to address. So if you didn't do this problem-solving approach, you would just try to reschedule things. Right. But here they're discovering other overarching problems that really need to be looked at. Mm-hmm. So the dad says, I know sometimes you complain you don't get enough time to just hang out and go to sleepovers and stay up late for fun. What's all that about? And she says, I know I've said that, and I do mean it. I kind of feel left out in school when the kids fool around at recess. I sort of don't even know how to fool around. I just laugh and goof off. It's like I never really learned how to relax. Does this make any sense? Well, it is hard to define what the priority should be for Lydia's perfectionism. Her wish for approval, her wish to be an Olympic star, her wish for more friends, and her socializing self-doubts. And I have to remind you, she's only 8. So the parents, thank goodness for parental intelligence, or they would have rushed in and just changed her schedule without realizing the depths of her concerns. So the dad, wisely, instead of jumping in with his ideas, begins the process by asking Lydia what she thinks can be done so she's a happier girl. So Lydia, you've told us so much today we didn't know. I'm sorry you've kept so many worries to yourself. Where should we begin to help you feel better about yourself and feel less pressure to be perfect? Oh, Daddy, she says, I don't know. Maybe I should think hard if there's one sport I really like the best. I'd like to have at least 1 or even 2 afternoons with nothing to do except play with girls. Is that bad? Oh, my, says her dad. It's begun to sound more like stress and fun. Even your pediatrician's worried about you. She says, really? Why didn't you tell me? Excuse me. I think I get too many colds, and sometimes I just want to stay home in bed for the day. But I didn't realize that that was realistic. So her mom says, it's very realistic. You are an exhausted child. We have to face that together and figure out what are reasonable expectations for you. I like your idea of focusing on one sport. You have a sense of what that might be. She says, I'd like to be on a travel team for lacrosse because that's based on my school friends who I could really get to know. But you'd have to be traveling too, would you mind? Her mother says, it would be a pleasure to take you and your friends on the trips. how about we put the idea of the Olympiad on hold for a while and just enjoy what you do now at 8 years old rather than try to be the best. I know you'll succeed and we'll get a charge out of that, but being a part of a team is special too. So I can't give the full discussion because there's not enough time, but suffice it to say that both parents were delighted with the plan they came up with Lydia's input. They knew now that they had to make sure to speak to her differently, so she didn't think approval was number one on their list. Furthermore, they discussed her diet plan to make that more realistic. They talk with the pediatrician about it. So they're already thinking ahead so that she doesn't develop an eating disorder, especially with this sense of perfectionism that she has.
Right.
So problem solving the parental intelligence way really was the right road for this family. They all shared honestly their worries, their pleasures, and Lydia was soon on her way to becoming not only a more relaxed, less exhausted child, but also closer to her parents who she could trust. She now knows she can tell her worries, not always try to be perfect. So that's one really, I think, great example of
an very eye-opening.
Yeah, it was very eye-opening for the parents.
I mean, it breaks my heart a little bit to think that we do this to our children. I'm going to tell you right now, I'm a guilty culprit, and my kids are really young still to think, mm-hmm. you know, that they should be doing all these things and being involved. And then what factors are making them, you know, even 8 years old, what they're thinking about on top of that is like adult things they don't need to.
Yeah. It's amazing. But that's, you know, they feel this wish for approval is so dynamic that kids come up with conclusions that their parents never intended.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting too with, you know, I didn't grow up with it. I mean, I'm immersed in it now, but I didn't grow up with it. I wonder if, you know, technology or screen time with kids and even parents seeing, you know, this curated life online that you see this, oh my God, my kid's in dance and my child's in band or they're playing this sport and they're on this travel team. It's like, well, why aren't my kids doing all these things? But we only see the good stuff. We don't see all the other stuff. So I wonder if that is something that's really starting to hinder us as parents and children as well.
I think so, especially because sometimes or most a lot of time our kids know more about technology than we do. Mm-hmm. So the availability of highly entertaining computer and video games, as well as late night socializing on the internet, definitely contribute to an unwillingness to get to bed at a decent time because they're having fun.
Yeah.
So they don't, teenagers especially, don't get the 9 to 10 hours of sleep that they really need. And you may find, we've been talking about littler kids, but teens you may find nap in the afternoon unavoidably. They come home and they can't start their homework. They actually fall asleep.
Mm-hmm.
And so it gives them an untimely sense of energy late in the day then, contributing to late nights.
Right.
So teenagers with insufficient sleep typically catch up sleep on weekends with late rising times on weekend mornings. And it's important to understand this so that it's not a battleground. These kids need sleep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. They need sleep. And you talked a little bit about, you know, teens and children and kind of, I'm curious to what your take is on, you know, I keep seeing more and more nowadays with traditional start times and end times of school days with our children. And they're, you know, the lot that I've read is it seems to be maybe with all the research that's been done that it's possibly out of balance the way we do it. So what do you think of the traditional start times of school days for children's and the different age ranges? And are we making it more difficult for our children?
I really think so. We have to really, that's why I say it's a societal issue. We have to really rethink this because the problem is particularly geared to high school kids who biologically need to sleep later than the usual school times permit. So there is a growing but too slow recognition of this factor because it would mean letting the littler kids get on the school buses early when they're chipper like your little one and give the later times to the teenagers. It becomes complicated because the teenagers have before before school activities and after school activities, and that's why they're sent on the bus early. But it's not working. Almost all teenagers, as they reach puberty, become kind of like walking zombies because they're getting too little sleep. And there can be little question that sleep deprivation has a negative effect on them. Insufficient sleep causes difficulties in school, including disciplinary problems that are totally unnecessary, sleepiness in class, and poor concentration. So we really have to ask, what good does it do to try to educate teenagers so early in the morning? You could be giving the most stimulating, interesting lecture to a sleep-deprived kid early in the morning or right after lunch when they're at their sleepiest because they've had carbohydrates. And the overwhelming drive to sleep replaces any chance of alertness, cognition, memory, understanding, or just plain enjoying learning. So there is a clear association between sleep deprivation and poorer grades. Teenagers need 9 to 10 hours of sleep a night, but many don't get it. The problem includes the early start times for most high schools and an increasing amount of extracurricular and other demands on them. So it's important to be able to talk with, discuss with your teen that you understand their late morning or even early afternoon sleeps. This, again, should not be a battleground. It should be something that parents and children and teenagers talk about together. They do need to sleep in the weekend because they aren't getting what they need during the weekdays. So don't scream at your child for getting up at midday. That, you know, the kid's really catching up. According to, if we think about parental intelligence again, the excessive weekend sleep shouldn't be a source of argument, but a time when adolescents can feel that their parents do understand their various activities, their responsibilities, and their school loads. There's something called a phase delay. Adolescent sleep patterns reveal this. This is the tendency towards later times for both sleeping and waking. It's biologically determined. They're not being obstinate, you know, annoying kids who aren't listening to our bedtimes. Studies show that the typical high school student's natural time to fall asleep is 11 o'clock at night or even later. And this results in a lot of parenting arguments because parents aren't aware that this is their child's biological time clock. The phase delay is a source of controversy, as I said, in many school districts, because of all the activities they're trying to fit in for their kids, but it's not for the teenagers, but it's really not in keeping with their natural sleep cycle and can result in sleepiness during the day and reducing cognitive function and concentration. So I think really as a nation, we have to listen to the scientists and understand that these kids are sleep deprived because we're setting them up to be that way.
Yep. And I know here in Michigan, I think there's one school district that is adjusting their start times. So it'll be interesting to see what effect that will have, and maybe others will follow suit. It'll be really interesting to see it put into action. Yeah, I can't remember. I think it might be in Ann Arbor, but I can't remember exactly where it's at. But I've been seeing it. So because I even have some friends that are in those areas that have been talking about it a little bit on social media. So it'll be interesting to see how it evolves.
Yeah, and Michigan's interesting because they have the wonderful University of Michigan. So they may be influenced by, you know, the studies that are done there. So that's pretty interesting. Are you in Michigan?
Yes, I am in the Detroit area, actually. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Yep, that's where we're based, but we reach everybody all over. So.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've talked a little bit about exhaustion and our children's, you know, natural needs. Mm-hmm. What are some ways that we can help our children? I know you talked about the vignette and you kind of gave us an example there, but what are some other ways that we can help our children to not take on those loads and help them kind of manage this better and help us manage it better for them?
Well, I think one of the things is diet. There's some really fascinating stuff about it. Foods we would never normally think can cause fatigue do. Let me give you just some examples.
Sure.
One is pasta. Carbs do give you a jolt of energy, but eating refined carbohydrates like pasta can cause a rise in your blood sugar, and then a plunge in your insulin levels, which cause fatigue and weakness. And that's white bread, pastries, muffins, processed foods, high flour and sugar content bring on drowsiness. In fact, it's why adults often get a clamoring to have like late night desserts, because actually it helps them sleep. Carbohydrates help you sleep.
Yeah.
So we have to monitor that during the day. A second one, which is so surprising to me, is bananas. It's known for being rich in potassium, which helps with nerve function and heart health. But it's also high in magnesium, which is an essential mineral for the body that aids sleep. So magnesium is actually called the relaxation mineral. And we often tell our kids, in fact, I've seen coaches tell their kids, eat a banana as soon as you wake up. And it's like the opposite advice that you should be getting. Another one is red meat, which is a little more unknown. Certainly gives you iron, and it's an energy booster. But the high level of fat that's in these meats, plus dairy products, pizza, gravy, sauces, make you feel weighed down when you eat them. And that's because fats are more difficult for the body to break down, and they require a more elaborate process than other nutrients. So because of that, your body sends more energy to digestion, leaving you tired. Another very odd one is cherries. They're a natural source of melatonin, which is the hormone known to improve the quality of sleep, which is great for evening hours, but not during the day. In fact, you might, unless there's an allergy, you might want to give your little three-year-olds cherries at night. That might actually,
That's not a bad idea.
But it's certainly healthy, so.
Yeah, absolutely. It's worth a try.
Yeah. Another one is salmon, a great source of protein, very good for you, rich in vitamin B6. But like the cherries, the body uses it to make melatonin, the sleep hormone. So if someone is naturally low in energy and wants to maintain peak energy, it's just important to have salmon at night. And that is really more typically when it's eaten. But it is interesting. This one actually really surprised me, and that's lettuce. Actually has sedative properties that affect your brain. It's called lactucin, L-A-C-T-U-C-I-N, which has been shown to have a calming and pain-relieving effect. So this is good for moms, not only for kids, but I say moms because they often meet for lunch and have big salads.
Right.
And feel drowsy and don't get it because it's the lettuce. It's really fascinating.
That is interesting.
And just the last one about turkey, because we've all heard that turkey makes you tired.
Right.
As tryptophan.
Yeah.
And that tryptophan is what's called a precursor to serotonin, which is a mood modulator. It's often in antidepressants, and it induces relaxation and supports sleep. However, it's not the tryptophan, as often believed, that's making you tired. It's that tryptophan is eaten often, or turkey, with carbohydrates. If you think about Thanksgiving dinner, it's not really the turkey causing this sleepiness. It's the turkey plus the rolls and the pie.
Right.
So, actually, and this is another last interesting one, that turkey has slightly less tryptophan than even chicken, which we don't. So that's just a bunch of very odd, interesting little facts.
No, that is, and it's interesting to know. And there's some, you know, like you said, you don't think about it, especially lettuce. Wow, that does make a lot of sense. And I mean, you think of lettuce being a majority of water, so.
Yes, I know. Yeah, I was fascinated by that one.
Yeah, it's very, very interesting. So you kind of hit the dietary needs. So you think the diet is the most important. Is there anything else like outside of the diet that we should be doing? You mentioned a lot with communication and just talking to our kids to see where the root of the problem is.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely. That seems like maybe another good idea, or maybe you have something to add to that.
Just to make it a collaborative thing. In other words, lots of parents or kids think of bedtime as punishment, you know, like you have to go to sleep now. But they should know, they should understand, like we understand as adults, we sleep because we need to restore ourselves. Mm-hmm. This is a good thing to do. It's not a punishment. It's not because you're bad. I never use it as a punishment. Like you're bad, get in bed, go to your room, because it really is so misleading. That's not what sleep's about.
Right. You're almost teaching them like Pavlov's dog, that you get in trouble, you go to your room, it's bad. You don't want to go there. And then you're ingraining exactly. that in their brain.
Yeah. Yeah. So sleep gets totally distorted as to its real purpose. Mm-hmm. So from the time, you know, you're taking care of your infant to the time you're taking care of your teenager, this should really be a positive thing to discuss with your kids. And it's interesting, you know, so why not have a good conversation about it? Hear their points of view, you know, see what their opinions are, and then come to some logical conclusions together about how to handle it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, these are all awesome ideas and things that, man, I didn't think about. And I know that I'm taking away a lot for this little bit of time that we've had, and definitely going to, you know, read more into your books and get more information that way. Before we kind of let you tell us where they can find you and all those great things, there's a reoccurring segment we have. Is there, you know, things you can't wait to see through your children's eyes? You as a parent, now your children are grown and okay. Are there things that you've experienced or you really got to experience again or see kind of come full circle with your children that was very, very exciting to see?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you a little conversation I had with my 9-year-old grandson named mm-hmm. Eddie. He is a pretty hard worker, and he's fun. You know, he likes to be the center of attention. And he joins every competition that exists. So his school had this really rigorous book competition where they had, these are in third graders and fourth graders, they had to read 9 books and memorize all the details. And I don't mean they focused on comprehension or the plot. They focused on, like, what color was the main character's hair? What did the quilt look like on her bed? Like, all these little kind of meaningless details. So Eddie is like a real memorizer, and he learned everything he can. And he was part of this team. It was a team thing. And they actually mixed the third graders with the fourth graders. He's a third grader. So I was talking on the phone with him. He's great on the phone. It's really fun for me. And I said to him, so how did the book competition go? He said, oh, we lost. I said, you lost? What do you mean? He said, well, one of the kids wouldn't listen to me. And I told them the right answer. And they said the wrong answer. So they got it wrong. So we didn't win. I said, wait a minute, one mistake, and you say you lost? How does that actually work? He says, well, we came in second. I said, Eddie, coming in second is not losing. It's not failing. It's just one little mistake that wasn't even yours. I think you did great.
Right.
And it like gave him such a totally different perspective. I mean, it was really fascinating to me, and I was so glad we had that talk, because I wanted him to see, first of all, that winning and losing wasn't what it was all about, and that he worked really hard. He was industrious and persevered, and it's hard to work with a team when your team members don't work as hard as you do. But mm-hmm. there's a lot of teamwork in classes these days,
oh, yeah.
so kids are learning to adjust to that. Yeah. So that's just one little.
Yeah, that's a great share. Mm-hmm. That's a great way, great share. No, but you're absolutely right. Collaborative learning is a huge thing, you know, towards, you know, obviously 21st century learning is
yeah.
you know, collaborating and working with each other is a huge movement, you know, uh-huh. for our kids. So yeah, mm-hmm. it's really important to see, you know, how it works and when weight is being pulled and when things don't always go, not everybody works at the same, you know, energy or level or interest.
Yes. So.
Very interesting.
Exactly. Yeah.
Very interesting. Well, this is your chance. How can folks find you? You know, we're going to put everything in our show notes too. So when people are listening to this, they can just click on the little information so they can go directly to your links. But let's tell them right here how they can find you on whether it's social media, your website, how they can get your books, all those great things.
Okay. Thank you. My website is really simple. It's just my name, LAURIEHOLLMANPHD.com. And it's actually being literally revised right now. And you can go to it now, but you won't see all my books. If you go to it on Wednesday, you will. And that's when it's going live. So that's a great place to go, because you can click on the book you want and it'll take you right to Amazon.
Awesome.
So yeah, it's really easy. Another way it really is just to go to Amazon and put in my name, and mm-hmm. you'll see all the books and all the descriptions and the book covers, which are fun to see. I have a Twitter account. That's easy. Lori Holman. Lori Holman Twitter PH.
Okay.
Is the Twitter handle.
All right. And we'll put that in the notes too, so folks can just click on it and it'll take.
Yeah. I think I might have sent you the wrong thing. I'm going to check.
That's okay.
Okay. The Facebook is facebook.com/parentalintelligence.
Okay.
Because that was the first key concept that I had. So when I wanted an author account, that's what I named it.
Mm-hmm.
But my latest book is actually about narcissism. So I'm trying to see what to do about that, because it's a different topic.
Right.
So that's where I am.
That's awesome. Well, we'll put it all in the show notes too. Folks will be able to find it and be able to interact with your stuff and get your books, and hopefully we'll all start to become, you know, even better parents than all of us are trying to be right now. So we appreciate your insight and input today. Thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it, Dr. Holman.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's really fun.
Don't forget, you can email us if you have a question about the show, or if you have a show topic, experienceanddad@gmail.com. You can also find us on social media. Just search for The Dad Experience. And until next time, thanks for listening to The Dad Experience.